It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Blindly obvious, it's clear as can be. The things we ignore, but we all can see. Darkness, it flees when scattered by the light. Blindly obvious, hidden in plain sight.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff, and today we are on the topic of conversation of the heavy burdens we carry. How can we as maybe a community or a church get back to really our God-given purpose of going out and serving those who are carrying burdens, maybe even if it's ourselves? Jeff?
This is a complex issue because there's needs and there's wants, and you got to distinguish those.
Whew, and that's a very fine line, isn't it?
It is.
Because we paint our wants in our needs section all the time.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of it. I know that.
Well, we intermesh them in a way that's not healthy or not even logical. It's I need to go on vacation, so can you give me, can the church help me with $2,000 because I'm short? And
yeah,
I wanna...
but for real, could you do that? Because I'm going like next week.
See, you're my case in point. No, we do. We have a very distorted view of what needs truly are.
How do we, though, a great question I'm going to ask you is, how do we separate that in others? How do we come along and help people and make this, so what, I come up next to somebody and I said, hey man, it looks like you're really struggling carrying some heavy weight. And he's like, yeah, you know, I got lots of credit card debt and I've made some bad choices and, you know, I'm on the verge of bankruptcy. I'm like, oh man, that really sucks. Sorry, you created that problem yourself.
Well, then you find out he's got a $80,000 yacht and he's got, you know, a $5 million home. To some degree, he did create that mess.
Sure.
Right.
That's what I'm saying. So how do you find that balance of like, hey, I'm supposed to love because that's what I was sent here to do versus thinking I'm the judge of everyone's problems?
I think what you're saying, what's the formula?
Correct.
And there isn't one. Every case is unique. For example, you got a homeless guy who's on the side of the street making $30,000 to $60,000 to $90,000 a year holding a cup out.
Right. And then he goes home, jumps in his SUV, drives home to his nice house in the suburbs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've also got the guy who just won't work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, then you got the guy who's in a wheelchair, disabled.
And just fell into some bad circumstance that was out of his control and
right.
He ended up on the street.
All three of those have a different solution.
Man, you're right.
And that's the issue, is that we're trying to get a cookie cutter solution for everything. And you can't do that.
Mm. But if you pray for discernment and understanding, you're going to have the answer to what to do, I think.
Oh, when you said pray, I thought you were going to say just pray for them that somebody else will come along and help them.
Oh, no. But man, that's common too, isn't it?
Isn't it?
We just do the like, oh, well, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah,
thoughts and prayers.
I'm praying
thinking
for
of you.
You.
Glad
praying
it's not me, but hey, man.
I hope God sends you somebody who's going to help you because it's not me.
Yeah, I can't believe like I'm right here and praying for you. He couldn't possibly be sending me to help you, but man, I hope he does send somebody.
Yeah, I think the whole thing is like, for example, the first guy with the $80,000 yacht and the $5 million home, it's like, I think you need to sell something, buddy. You know, mm-hmm. I think you have...
Okay, it sounds like you could avoid bankruptcy by selling your third home.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Perfect.
I think that, you know, that's really something you need
to work
on. And
then the second guy, you're like, hey man, if you actually just got a job... you'd probably be moving up.
Yeah, we're
doing just fine.
Standing out here with a cup in your hand is not a job.
And then the third guy actually probably needs some caregivers and some help.
Right. That's
because he's
where,
genuinely disabled.
Right. It's funny, when you read the church, you actually find there were rules built in because people were taking advantage of the kindness of the church because, again, we are commanded to help those in need who have these burdens. But then there were people who were, how do you say this, becoming victims of their own decisions and creating burdens that they wanted people to fix.
Well, sure.
And so there were rules built in like, okay, buddy, but if you don't work, you don't eat.
Mm.
Yeah. Like the other one, there was a widow's list of back in that time, if you were a widow, it was a death sentence because your husband was the main income source.
Right. So you would therefore... if your husband were to pass away, you have no means of supporting your family.
Only the widows who didn't have family to care for them were allowed to go on the list for help.
Mm.
So in other words, family was required to first come to their aid before the church would come and carry that burden of financial responsibility. Yeah. There was another thing too, and another built-in system. We may discuss this next this Sunday. There's another built-in where that was if you weren't a godly woman who showed hospitality and basically exemplified the traits of Christ, then you also couldn't be on the list. So if you were like an immoral, wicked woman,
yeah, don't expect to come into God's favor because your husband's passed away and ask for the church to just support and take care of you.
Right.
So it's a whole like the idea of community.
Yeah.
Play your part, give your share, and when you're in need, someone's picking you up.
I think it's, I wouldn't say it's give your share, it's be
do
willing.
Do your share. What about
be,
do your share?
Be willing to share.
All right.
And maybe I'm just being sensitive. I don't like to give your share because it's a socialist statement today of communism. Okay. So they try.
Say, how about, like I said, what if we say do your share? That's active.
It is active, but the share is
I think the socialism statement would be take your share.
Oh, it is.
They
work hand in hand. Well, the give your share, how do we say this, is it's compulsory.
What do you mean?
In the socialist model, everyone has to give into the community bank. A good example would be Social Security. Everyone has to give into it.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
So you got to give your share. You got to do your share. You got to do your part. So I like do your part, yes, but what is your part? And that's where, again, discernment comes into play. And we even may have a debate among Christians about what that part is.
Sure.
I think we've gotten into, in the church, and listen, it's probably every organization, but we've gotten comfortable.
I guess I don't know how people in smaller churches have grown comfortable. Because like, I could see how like if you're in a bigger, what do they call those, like mega churches?
Yeah, mega
but
church.
Like, I mean, there's even some big churches around us that probably aren't mega churches, right? Mega churches by comparison to the churches around it, but not mega churches in comparison to like 50,000 members go to it.
Yeah, anything over, I think it's 1,000 is a mega church.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So my point to that, though, is I could see how if you went to one of those, how you could kind of grow complacent. It's big. It's beautiful. There's like people there that are most likely your age. You can just fall into these little groups of like pockets of like-minded people, and you're raising your kids together, and you get good worship on the stage on Sundays. It's, you know, pretty like going to a concert. I could see how you would grow complacent there. But how do you grow complacent in a smaller church as it's just like...
The complacency I'm talking about, I mean, yes, it depends on what angle you're taking, but mine is more about personal responsibility. We live in a culture today that we're used to, for example, seeing people on the side of the street and we're comfortable just driving by. It's permeated our culture. I don't mean just the church. I mean, every organization. People have become immune, numb to seeing people struggle. And so we don't feel a personal responsibility. We say, oh, that's the government's job, or that's the policeman's job, or that's the fireman's job.
Like we have the whole structure backwards when, like, as it was designed, that was the church's job.
Well, those
kind of to reach those people.
If you think about it, these organizations that we depend upon are really an imitation, a copy of what the church used to be and do.
Well, right. If in a healthy society, this money that goes to all these organizations to do all these things would be localized, and it would be people giving to their churches, and then they would be reaching out into their communities. So everybody would be taking care of those around them versus, you know, here's $100 and it's going to go halfway across the country. You'll never hear about it again.
As I look over the horizon of time, from my vantage point, it looks like When our country was established, again, established on Christian principles and values, that the communities that existed that were enmeshed, right, they were interconnected, they had a very much a team approach, whereas today, every person kind of lives on an island that we call our own property and live in our little boat we call a houseboat. And we've established our own little comfort. We maybe invite a few people into our living room space, but as a whole.
Yeah, but not even that anymore, man. I remember back in like just the 90s, not that long ago, your front door would be unlocked. Nobody would even really, unless it was a complete stranger, anybody that knew you on a personal level wouldn't even knock on your door. They'd just come in.
Well, I do that at your house now.
Well, right. But that's what I'm saying. That's what everybody did back then.
Because they were more like, they were beyond friend. They were like family, right?
Yeah, you can come in my house.
A Framley. They were Framley.
To where now it's like somebody knocks on your door and everybody in the house looks at it. You got somebody coming over? Who's here?
Right.
And let's duck down. Pretend we're not home. They'll go away.
You're automatically either suspicious or not wanting to open the door. And no, right. it's like an isolationism, and it's not just in regards.
But we've done it to ourselves.
True, true. But it's not just in physical proximity, it's emotionally. We've isolated ourselves, and that's what I'm saying comfortable is.
Well, the emotional came long before the physical. We're just at the point of physical now. But I think we emotionally isolated ourselves a long time ago.
Sure, sure. But the problem with that, in particular for the church, is the call that Christ gave us doesn't permit us to do that. And so when Jesus said, come follow me, and when his followers said, come and see, and they were inviting people into the community to, again, like we said, to belong before you believe, the invitation wasn't just to come to Jesus. It was an invitation into my life.
Well, how often do we get it wrong because we write people off, or we don't see someone's burdens they're carrying or their suffering as a suffer because it's not a struggle to us?
Yeah, that's your burden. That's your problem.
Right. Even though, like, because we don't struggle with that issue, so we just can't see it as a struggle.
Right. Or we've been through that struggle, and it's time for you to fight for your life. And listen, there is something to be said. We've all got to do our part. I'm not to treat you like an adult child either. Like, you do bear a responsibility.
All right, here's a good example. I was just listening to this on the Sean Ryan show. They had the founders of this curriculum, this education curriculum called Classical Conversations. And he had them on. They did like this 3-hour interview. The CEO of the company, the founder, the mom was talking about how in one of their, this is a homeschool curriculum, in one of their curriculum communities, because they have like communities across the whole country, there was a kid in one of the high school programs who came out as transgender. You know, this is a Christian-based classical conversation, you know, grammar, logic, rhetoric, very, once again, how the country was founded, like the way these people talk, spoke. They had to come to a conclusion of, you know, the heads of the company basically said, you know, we're gonna leave this up to you guys within your community as far as how you wanna handle it. And they decided to, you know, if we're really Christian, we're going to let this person stay in the community, but we're also going to tell them, we're going to identify them by the gender God gave them. We're not going to play along with the transgender thing, but we want you to stay here because we love you. I think they either said 10 or 12 weeks later, the kid had changed their mind and thanked them for loving on them and letting them kind of figure it out. And that's, but how often, man, do people just, oh, you're an addict. You're never going to amount to anything. Write you off. Oh, you're a different gender ideology than I could ever identify with. So how could we ever have anything in common? Jesus couldn't love you.
Yeah.
How often do people do that, man?
I every day. I think that we live in a society, again, and it has the numbing effect on the church too, because we've allowed the culture to influence the church rather than the church influence the culture.
Yes, yes, yes.
But the irony is that the people you're describing are the very people God goes after and has sent his people after.
100%.
You know, so the ones that the world is quick to, in their compassion, write off and throw away and treat like garbage, we're sent to pursue.
Right, but how often do we do that?
Well, we don't. That's that. Again, we've embraced that same culture. And listen, if anything, the culture doesn't blame us for doing it. They're like, yeah, we agree with you. We don't like you as Christians, but we agree that you should treat those people like they are garbage. And it's like, hold on a minute. And again, Jesus said, they will know you are my disciples by your love for one another. But more than that, our love for others, period. We value and love people others deem unlovable. And that's ridiculous. That is, who does that?
Hmm.
Right, and that was the marker that the world would go, there's something special about those people.
The thing is, though, is when you really take a good look inside yourself, how could you stand and say that you honestly are lovable or worthy to be lovable?
Yeah, we've just cleaned ourselves up to be...
Sure.
Yeah.
But we're no different than those people who, you know, oh, those they could never be. They could never amount to being saved or... They're unworthy of that. How am I any more worthy than they are?
Well, what you just touched on is the world loves with conditions. If you look this way, act this way, have these things,
provide this,
we love you.
Can produce that.
But if you can't, then you have no value and are refuse. What we learn from God is that our value is not assigned based upon what we can produce or do, but in our inherent nature that God gave us, that we are made in his image.
And look how wrong as a society we've been getting that, and look how miserable so many people are.
Well,
because you can't live up to that standard.
Well, your illustration from the Sean Ryan show is you've got all these in our current issue of this day with all these people trying to change their gender. The irony in that, by the way, if your gender is not tied to your reproductive parts, then why are you trying to change them to match your believed gender? I don't understand. Like, if you're trying to, if a boy is trying to say he's a girl, then why do you have to cut off your male genitalia so you can say you're a girl? Because what you're really acknowledging is your genitalia do affect your identity and what you are. Does that make sense? Like, it's so illogical. But anyway, that's not my point. My point is this: the people today who are super confused, they're trying to seek identity in some other construct other than your value being from God, as he assigned you.
How often are children, I mean, I was a kid once. I'm not saying I was confused about that issue specifically, but you're confused about all kinds of stuff, man.
I still am.
Well, right. So as you're figuring things out, like the fact that we would say, yeah, you should go ahead and make a decision you could never come back from. Like, that is insanity.
It's abuse.
100%.
It's abuse.
100%.
And the irony is they wrap it in this victimhood that you're coming to their aid and their confusion and helping them destroy the possibility, regardless of whether you're a boy or a girl trying to be the opposite, you're destroying their ability in the future to have children.
Right.
You're wrecking that. Like, you're cutting off their line. So once they finally get, if they do, many of them actually do, once they get this straightened out, they're not going to have children. Like, they're done. That's so sad, man.
That for a decision that they made when they were incapable of making a decision because they're a child.
Right. Yeah, you empowered them to destroy themselves. Mm. It's almost like in a lesser version, what the Canadian system did, what's it called, MAID, or I forget what the name of it, where they're assisted suicide. We're doing a lesser version we're not killing them, but we're killing their line, their family line ends with them.
You're ending the lineage.
Yeah, it's like so this.
It's a silent kill. You're stopping reproduction.
Well, and there you just nailed it. I think this goes into the agenda that in the end, all they care, and they don't care how they get there, they just want to curb population.
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, there was those kind of conspiratorial, not conspiratorial in that they existed, but what was there as far as those Georgia Guidestones that just got blown up a couple years ago. Yep. Nobody knows who did it.
Right.
There's like 8 different languages explaining how to harmonize and keep the earth in good, basically good harmony. And the number one rule is to have the population around 500 million people.
500 million. So think about that.
Well, we're at like, what, 7 billion?
I think we're almost closer to 8 billion.
Okay. Well, I mean, that tells you, based on that assessment, whoever's plan, agenda, idea, philosophy, that is, that involves the removal of a lot of people. For the earth to be in harmony.
95 maybe percent reduction? Yeah. I mean, there's what? Maybe 350 million Americans. So.
And I say that to say, I think there are so many things that if you look at the world perspective from that agenda of man, it kind of seems like there is an idea to stop people from having babies and reproducing. A lot of arguments you can make for that, I think, from the foods we eat to the things that are, you know, sprayed on the foods we eat, to the medicines we take, to the things that are sprayed in the air, allegedly. I mean, from all angles.
Follow this. The God who gave you value said that you have intrinsic value that cannot be taken from you, and that's why he pursues you and commands his people to redeem you. The same God who did that told his people, it was the first command, go be fruitful and multiply. Mm-hmm. Go fill the earth.
So once again, you can clearly see the separation of God's agenda, the natural order of doing things, and an order of doing things in which is the complete opposite. Like a flipping of the pyramid upside down, per se, right?
Like there's an opposing force, unseen force.
So if that God tells you to go and multiply, be fruitful, this agenda says, yeah, do the opposite of that. Destroy the family and don't reproduce.
Yeah, and if anything, it says there's a club here of people who we value and everybody else should be offed.
That's kind of scary. You know what else is really weird about those guidestones? This is my favorite weirdest thing about that. There was a hole in one of the stones that you could look through and you would always see the North Star from the same hole.
Oh, that was just random chance.
Well, how's that work?
They just got lucky.
How could you always, if we're moving, how could you always see the same star?
They weren't following astrology or anything. It just got lucky. You know, it was just one of those quickie dinks. Yeah. Just random chance, dude, like a lottery ticket.
Where can I buy one? That's pretty cool. Yeah. I tell
you. You know, when you understand, again, you understand.
When you know, right?
That's right. Genesis 6. when those angels came down and did what they shouldn't have done. And had children with the daughters of men, and Nephilim were on the earth. They taught them all kinds of things. One of them was the stars and the hidden meanings that are written in there that God put in there that map and show his plans, his set destiny for the world. Yeah.
Now, let me ask you this.
Okay.
Do you think it's so much wrong to know and understand that, or to basically lean into that and use it as though it is God? Because I really do believe in these, like, let's say these like baby calendars, and people do these different things at certain times as far as like in their cycles for having boys and girls. And like, I think there's kind of something to that stuff.
Yes, there is order in the stars that reveal the plans of God. And if you have the information you need to decipher it, you can understand those things.
Well, in some ways too, couldn't you also decipher kind of the plans for you?
You keep asking questions. Just hold on. So, and we know that because, for example, the Magi, they knew the Messiah was coming, Jesus, these men who studied and stared at the stars, because they had that information and were able to figure out not only when it would happen, but where he would be, right? This one star. And that's how they came with their three gifts.
So this is like analytical programming before analytical programming.
In God's creative order, it not only reveals he exists, but it shows his function. If you want to go back into gender, you know, the plumbing works only one way for there to be the ability to produce children.
Right.
And so when you have man on man and girl on girl, not only is it, how do you say this?
Unnatural order.
Unnatural. Just lack
of, there is a 0% chance of reproduction.
But you cannot reproduce. Mm-hmm. Right. And so even in that system, you can see design and function, utility.
Sure.
The same with the stars. It's not just a quinky dink that, you know, if the sun were just a little bit closer or further, life would be impossible here on Earth. There's right. order and established. But yes, in the stars, there are things that are mapped. And when certain planets align, it's weird how things happen here on Earth. Right? Where we get into a problem is that just because it's there doesn't mean it's for you. I'll give an example. You have alcohol in your house. Mm-hmm. But you do not permit your children to have access to it. Why?
Well, it depends on how bad they're acting up.
That's not true.
No, that's not true.
Obviously,
you don't let them have access to it because it's not made for them and it's not something for children.
Right. It would actually, they lack the capacity and ability to use it.
Sure.
Based upon their maturity and cognitive ability. Can we say that?
Honestly, oftentimes, that's why I quit drinking it so much. So do I.
Well, God's doing the same thing. And we were never meant to have that information. Our dependence wasn't upon the stars he created that mapped the universe and the world and the timeline that we live in, but just rely upon him. He's the one who made it. He established the order. Trust him.
But that's kind of my question. Why put it there for understanding if we're not ever meant to understand it? Not saying we still don't rely on him and give him credit for who has put it there. He's the artist, the maker of it.
Fine. We'll go into a microcosm. Why do you hang family pictures in your house? You know who your family is. Well, you don't have to have.
It's your family. Well, honestly, I don't really look at those pictures anyway. That's for my wife.
I understand, but it's a cultural thing that we do. Why do we do that, right?
Right. Like, you know, no, I get you.
You know who your family is.
Right.
You know, why do you have to put your wife's name in your phone for contacts? You know who her name is. You don't have to do that. Why do you carry a driver's license? You know who you are.
Well, that's for the state.
That's right. Then again, you don't have a driver's license, right? I was waiting for you to say that. Anyway, there are a lot of things that we do not because we want others to have it. Like, you decorate your house, not for others. It's for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's an echo back.
Okay.
Are you wrong for that?
No.
Would it be wrong for your neighbor to come here and take the picture off your wall and put it and hang it in their house?
But I'm missing, I guess I'm missing.
I'm helping you. We're getting there.
He doesn't want us to understand.
We're slowly getting there.
Okay.
Would it be wrong for your neighbor to come in here, walk in your front door, it's unlocked, and grab a picture off your wall and hang it in their house?
I mean, if they
without your permission?
It?
Yeah, stole it.
Okay.
And
well,
that's
you're not
just
stealing
it.
This.
No. You are stealing it. You never would have figured it out. The only reason we know about it was because the angels told us.
Well, what about ask and you shall receive? What if I ask for understanding and I got it?
You're asking the wrong questions.
What do you mean?
The angels came. We know this from the book of Enoch. Those angels came and shared.
Well, hold on, that's not in the scripture.
Hold on a minute. Well, it's also explained elsewhere. Divination, witchcraft, sorcery. All of these all of this stuff we're talking about. And where did that come from? Those same angels. Which, by the way, is not only forbidden, it's a death penalty to do it. Why? Because those things, while they are real, create an independence from God as you seek to manipulate the order that God created and use it to your own advantage in order to reinforce your idea that you're God, which ultimately is the sin of Lucifer.
I would buy that. All right.
Now, do you understand?
But where are you? I guess what I'm missing is...
Why would you do it? Here it is. Why would you do that? Why would you study the stars in the order that God established?
I mean, I guess the only good answer is to bend it for my own benefit.
There you go.
I can't argue that.
Yeah,
that's the only good reason I can
tell
you.
No, that is the reason that you're doing it. So is that what we're called to?
No.
So you just answered your own question.
That's true. I've never really thought about it like that.
That's why now you know.
I've never thought about it because I'm always like, well, why not? It's there. Why not understand?
No, what you're doing is if it's right out here, then it's for me. No, yeah, that's not true.
Not necessarily. All right. That's kind of the trap Solomon fell into, though, in a way, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Kind of like, well, if it's here, why don't I use it?
Yeah. It's
and then, like, he used it and went, oh.
We
that's why I don't use it.
We manipulate even ourselves to get what we want and justify what we want. We say, well, anything, God is good, and so anything God creates is good. And so I can have it and use it any way I want to. Where'd that logic come from? Any way I want to. Because now I'm the authority. I'm special.
All right.
You know, we get that from our culture again.
That's true.
Think that's about good, it, man.
No, I know.
Yeah.
It's like, bruh.
That's the deep stuff right there.
Yeah, we got way off into the weeds.
Yeah,
on that.
We did. Well, it does play into what we're talking about, is that we do the same thing when it comes to our lives. You know, many of us live our lives like it's all about me instead of, again, about God and others.
Isn't that tough, though, to separate from a, not even just a, not even saying anyone has just a secular worldview. Isn't it hard to separate from the, man, I know that I'm going to go over there and do that. It's not going to benefit me. It's inconvenient. It kind of sucks. Or I could not do that, not be unbenefited. It's hard to separate that, right? To go and put yourself out willingly for a greater cause and a greater benefit.
Yeah, I think
But now when you do it, the feeling you get when you're done is always awesome. It's just actually doing it.
We've got so many things. Time out here. We got so many things working against us here. I mean, and I can't discuss all the different levels, but so culturally, you've got a culture that says it's all about you, Tyler. Mm-hmm. Go get yours.
Well, look at all the social media. Right. Everything is about building a self idolization almost.
Your own throne.
Mm-hmm.
Think of it that way. Your own throne where you're worshipped. And then you've got your own evil desires. And listen, not all desires are evil. The problem is that we always bend things, and if that feels good, I want to do it more. And I want more and more and more.
I think what becomes evil is in our desires that we start to compromise, and we end up doing things that, like, in the beginning, I would have never done that, to then feel and accomplish the desires that we have.
Well, that appetite to enjoy and to...
It just grows.
It does.
Because it eventually, the small bite is unsatisfying, and now I need a whole piece, and then all of a sudden I'm eating the whole pie.
Yeah, the new focus becomes a gluttonous absorption of whatever that is.
Sure.
Right? And then it becomes all consuming. That's when it becomes evil, because then your purpose is only to have the feel good, as opposed to living a life that honors God and as you love others. Yeah, I just, again, there's all these distortions that, and the other part of this too is who likes rules? Like I asked a young lady one night, one of our kids, you know, for our evening program, and I said, who likes rules? And the kids are like, I hate rules. And it's like, okay. I said, well, do you think it'd be an awesome world to live in if it had no rules? And their first inclination and first reaction is, well, yeah, it'd be awesome.
I can do whatever I want.
I can do whatever I want, anytime I want. And I said, so tell me this. Do you think it'd be cool if people could steal? And she stopped and thought about it and went, no, that'd be terrible. And I said, do you think it'd be cool if people could murder? No, that'd be horrible. Not. Do you think it'd be cool if people could legally cheat? No. I said, okay, so which rules do you want to get rid of that God gave us? And you're like, I think I like all of them. In our mind, we think a world with no rules means I get to, again, have maximum pleasure without limits.
Mm-hmm.
We don't think about the lawless end that it creates, because if everyone's doing that, it creates a very selfish, narcissistic world. Oh, hello today.
Oh.
Yeah, and it leads to our destruction, not our betterment. So all of these things, again, back to God and the structure and the order he gave us, the things he did reveal to us were only what were needed and necessary that we could handle, that would create, if you will, the best version of a world we would want to live in. And anything that we do to distort that destroys us and our society and our world. If we would get back to the purpose and plans God established. So we've all got burdens in life. We've all got problems. We've all got things that we need to do. And while we don't want to raise adult children who can't fend for themselves, we all have those moments in life. We get sick, or we have an expense that we can't fully cover, or just burdens of all kinds, that in that moment, we would benefit greatly if someone in love would just come alongside and assist us. Again, the design and function God gave us, we get the best world and experience we want to live in, as opposed to the misery where people are trying to check out.
So you're saying in some ways we've created almost a hell on earth.
Yes. Yes. All the while believing we're building a utopia, we created a hell.
I don't know who said this, but it kind of makes sense to me. This earth kind of seems like if you're a non-believer, this is the closest place to heaven that you'll ever be. So like earth is both a heaven and a hell. Which is kind of an interesting perspective when you think about it. Like, we're here and we have the opportunity to make it more like heaven, or we can make it more like hell. But when we pass on, obviously, if you believe, this is the most like hell you will ever experience. And if you don't believe, this is the most like heaven you'll ever experience.
Yeah, when you think about that, it's like, wow. But that is the promise, right? Mm-hmm. For those of us in this world, you know, that have that knowledge as believers who trust in, again, the God who made us and gave us a way to deal with the sin issue in our life, which we all have, and Christians are not perfect. Hello, world. We struggle every day, but we're trying to bend our will and our desires back to what God intended and planned. But there's a way through Jesus Christ, who died to satisfy the debt we could not pay for our sin. He did that for us, created a way. And if we'll embrace that, accept that, like you just said, the only hell we will ever experience is the worst moment we had here in this life.
Right. This has been Blindly Obvious. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. Peace, love, and God bless. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
We're walking past the signs each day, in little things missed along the way. The symbols hidden in glamour's light, blindly obvious, but out of sight. Misdirection, magician's lie. A trick so good you don't ask why. The truth, it sits with open arms, but we fool ourselves with deception's charm.
Oh, I can see it. The roads lead back.